shall be signs in the sun, and in the moon, and in the stars, and upon the earth distress of nations with perplexity, the sea and the waves roaring, men's hearts failing them for fear, and for looking after those things which are coming on the earth, for the powers of heaven shall be shaken. One man, one microphone, one mission, one message. True News, the only newscast reporting the countdown to the second coming of Jesus Christ. Here is End Time Newsman, Rick Wiles.
This is True News, uncensored news, views, and commentary. Welcome to the program. I'm Rick Wiles. Forbes magazine, the headline, Cheap Oil, Edging Us Toward Global Economic Collapse. The Telegraph, debtor days are over as Bank of International Settlements calls time on world credit binge. The London Express, fears of financial apocalypse amid warning over gathering storm in global markets. The Wall Street Journal, U.S. watchdog warns on banks' counterparty exposures. Years ago, I would have been labeled an alarmist and a sensationalist had True News published such headlines. These days, however, it's front page. On the biggest establishment newspapers in the world. Well, God's watchmen have fulfilled their obligation to warn the people. Few Christians heeded the warnings. Most of them are going headfirst into the storm. Michael Snyder is a former Washington attorney who heard the warnings, got out of D.C. He started the Economic Collapse blog to sound the alarm. Terry Saka spends his days helping people move their wealth out of paper money into silver. He specializes in transitioning retirement accounts from securities to precious metals. He's the president of Cornerstone Asset Metals. Michael, it's good to have you back on True News.
It's great to be with you, Rick.
Yes, and Terry Saka, glad to have you back also.
God bless you, Rick. Thank you.
All right. And as always, Doc Burkhart and Edward Zoll are here in the studio.
Thank you, sir.
Glad to have you. Edward?
Good to be here, too.
All right. Well, gentlemen, we're going to have a spirited discussion over the next hour about what is happening in the global economy. Michael, you spend your days monitoring the economic news, and you see these kind of headlines like I see. We're now seeing major publications like Forbes and the Wall Street Journal. They are publishing headlines that are more stark than anything you and I have ever put out. What has changed in recent months?
Well, we're seeing a dramatic shift. We're actually seeing a global economic slowdown right now. It's not just the financial markets, because the financial markets have been kind of up and down recently. But if you look at the hard economic numbers coming out from all over the world, for example, we just learned that in China, you know, for years, the growth of Chinese trade was really fueling the global economy, you know. And in fact, you know, China, they account for more total global trade than anyone else does when you total up all their exports and imports, even more than the United States. So when Chinese trade is incredibly important for the global economy, but during the month of February, Chinese exports dropped 25.4% in February compared to a year ago, and Chinese imports declined 13.8% compared to a year ago, and Chinese imports have now fallen for 16 months in a row. So it's not like this is just a one-month aberration. Yeah, they had a bad month, but this has been something which has been going on for months, and it's now accelerating, and so we're seeing this tremendous slowdown of the Chinese economy. In fact, there was just a headline in Reuters. They came out and said, hey, Chinese industries are going to be laying off 5 to 6 million workers moving forward here. So that, you know, the second largest economy on the planet that accounts for more global trade than anyone else, and that's really been fueling the growth of the global economy for the past several decades, things have changed dramatically. They're really slowing down. And so that's why one of the reasons why so many people are alarmed because of this huge slowdown in China.
Michael, that number is staggering. 25% drop in Chinese exports in 1 month, the month of February. That's a staggering decline in Chinese exports. And that means Chinese factories are producing 1/4 less goods than they were producing before. And it also means that the consuming nations that were buying Chinese goods, like the United States, are buying 1/4 less products than they were buying before.
Yeah, this is the real economy stuff that's being manufactured, bought, and sold and shipped all over the world. And, you know, this is part of the reason we're seeing the Baltic Dry Index. Last month, at one point, it dropped below 300 for the first time ever. I didn't even know it could go that low. And then there was a headline in Bloomberg. Bloomberg said that it's now cheaper to rent a 1,100-foot merchant vessel than it is to rent a Ferrari. That's how, you know, much global trade and global shipping has declined, where, you know, these huge vessels that go across the ocean, it's now cheaper to rent them than it is to rent a Ferrari. So it's absolutely crazy. But, of course, it's not just China. We're seeing plunging trade numbers in Japan. There, compared to a year ago, their exports and imports are down by double-digit percentages. And, in fact, the Japanese GDP has just gone negative again. In India, their exports were down 13.6% year-over-year basis in January. In the United States, you know, Obama said, hey, we're going to increase U.S. exports because it's going to mean more jobs for American workers. Our exports, you know, have been down. Most recent month we have numbers for, it was down 7%. And so we're seeing imports, exports, global trade just drop dramatically. And then it's the same thing, you know, with U.S. factory orders have fallen for 15 months in a row. Manufacturing numbers are falling all over the world. When you look at the hard economic numbers, you know, we never see numbers like this outside of a global recession. And that is what I believe that we are now entering into.
Interesting, you're saying, Rick, how you're outlining the mainstream has been pointing it out. You know, we've been doing, I know you have, and I know Michael has, and we did on the Wealth Transfer Show for some 6 to 9 months, have been outlining these statistics over and over and showing them, but now they're materializing mainstream. And I think not only does mainstream know, they have known, because we are seeing on all of the questions we're fielding from people all over the country, we're seeing an extreme abusive, demeaning, insulting, offensive, rude behavior coming from advisors and bankers and brokers. When people try to take money out, when people try to move money, we're finding people trying to get money out of annuities. It's taking forever. They're not even wanting to give it to them. They're not answering the phone calls. And I'm saying, if they are having this kind of trouble now and this type of abuse now by the bankers, brokers, advisors, and you think you're having a hard time getting money out of annuities now, what's going to happen when this really hits the fan?
Terry, you're saying that your clients are reporting to you that their financial brokers and advisors are stonewalling their attempts to move their money?
Oh, no, Rick, not stonewalling. I have voicemails. I was put on conference calls, and I've had them. They are abusive, demeaning. They're insulting. They're almost losing their emotional professionalism. Well, they are. I have never seen such a vile disrespect for people as advisors, bankers, and brokers are towards those who want to take money out. We had one elderly lady say that she wanted just $5,000 out of the bank, and they harassed her so hard, and it took a week to get it. That doesn't make any sense, and let alone annuities. We found people 3 to 6 months to get money out of annuities because they'll make up every excuse in the world to give them the money. So we know there's an extreme crack in the system, and we all know here on this call that it's because they're over-leveraged in the financial world, and for every million they pull out, they're selling a lot more. But it's beyond, Rick. They're getting abused. And when they mention silver, they're downright making them feel like a fool, and I just have to laugh because it's been the best performing asset class in the last 10 years, gold and silver, let alone its actual performance in the last 10 years in a ROI, and these people don't even know this. So they're beating up their clients. If advisors and bankers and such are beating them up to the point where they wear them out so they don't take the money out, and that has to tell you something.
You know, it tells me that a lot of people are taking their money out of the system. And these guys, the financial professionals, are dealing with this every single day.
Yeah.
And they're getting worn down by it. They're defensive.
And they're getting told by their managers, probably, Rick, because I worked at AG Edwards back in the day. I mean, I have multiple, you know, financial advisory licenses back in that time. And the manager tells you what to do. And they're probably telling these guys, you do not let that money leave this house. That ought to warn and put shivers down every one of we the people's spine.
It almost sounds theatrical, right? Something from that movie with Coffees for Closers, you know? How are these people even keeping their clients? Isn't there a basic rule in economics? You know, you're supposed to be nice to your clients. The customers are always right.
You know, Edward, I'm telling you, that's what we were trained and grew up on. That was a manners, respect, responsibility era. Not only are they not treating them that way, they're abusing them verbally and insulting them. We have a very personal friend, Rick. You and I both do, who helped one of his colleagues do it. And we did a conference call. This guy was so incredibly rude to our friend. He basically said, you weren't smart enough to make this decision, and I think we need to talk to your estate manager because you may be making a mistake. He insulted his intelligence. And this is very normal these days. All I know is when they're behaving like that, and you're right, Edward, that was never the way we used to treat people. Clients were always right. We showed respect. We treated people with respect. And if they're not doing that, what's coming up, what's coming down from the top to make them behave this way?
A lot of pressure.
A lot of pressure. Remember, we only have $600 billion in actual currency in the system here in this country. They're over-leveraged everywhere. You start pulling that money out, they're in a panic. But what's the safest place you could be when fiat currencies are collapsing like that? Obviously, it's not paper in a bank where they can bail you in. That's why we're so serious about physical silver in a vault. Because at least they can't, it's not part of the system, and it's a tangible asset. Because there's something inherently broken about the fiat world and the fractional banking system. And Michael's right. It's not just here. It's globally.
Yeah, there was a story last week in Der Spiegel in Germany. I mistakenly said last week that the article was about Austrian banks. That was not correct. It was about German banks. But the article said that German banks were being ordered to stockpile cash in their vaults, which I find an interesting development. You know, when the German central bank orders local banks, stockpile cash in your vaults.
So they're forecasting a run on the bank?
Well, they're all insolvent. And exactly right, Doc. They're insolvent, every one of them. They, for every dollar that goes in, they're loaning out 25. So they don't have the actual real money. They only have digits in the cosmos, not backed up by any real asset.
Okay, not only that, we know they don't have any assets to back the dollars or the euros or whatever currency we're talking about. But Terry, is it true that the central banks don't even have the paper money? If all of us asked for our paper money, could they supply it?
Oh, absolutely not. Matter of fact, in printed currency, just the U.S. dollar as an example, it's a guess, but roughly about $600 billion is in printable circulation here in the United States. Yet we have close to $9 trillion in the digits in the banking system.
Terry, then it doesn't exist, does it?
Well, according to them, and this is what they're trying to push for, if I can really see through it, they're trying to push to show that a digit on a computer screen is as equal as the paper. But right now, legally, tier one assets, being a bond, a dollar note, or gold, is equivalent as a payment factor. They're trying to make a digit in the computer screen as equal, and we all know there is no equal there. But they're trying to fool us to exponentially allow them to go Keynesian overdrive and print us into the debt hell pit. So it's a very dangerous thing that we're doing.
But you're saying there's really no money out there. They're just telling us.
Yes.
That there are all these dollars out there. I mean, I think the average person assumes that there are trillions and trillions of dollars of hundreds, fifties, twenties, somewhere floating around.
Rick, right there, what you just said, not only is that not true, 70% of all printed currency in dollars are $100 bills.
Really?
And you remember what Mr. I should insult him, but what he just came out and said not too long ago, that we should get rid of the $100 bill?
Oh, now I make the connection there.
All right, now go back and repeat that so that we all understand what you just said.
Okay, yeah, and I could say it. I could say his name because he made it public. Mr. Larry Summers came out and said that after the European Union eliminated the 500 euro note, Larry Summers came out and said we should eliminate the $100 bill. Now, the reason both of them said that, the euro 500 note and the U.S. $100 note are 70%+ of the entire paper circulation of money.
Now, that $600 billion, 70% of that is $100 bills, right?
Well, no, actually, in real printed currency in the United States, it's somewhere in the area of $1.2 billion, but they anticipate about $600 billion is overseas in banks and people's hands. So in the United States, we believe there's roughly $500-700 billion of actual circulated paper money. But out of the $1.2 trillion of actual M supply paper money that the U.S. has printed, 70%+ of them are actual $100 bills. So if they eliminate that $100 bill, they essentially destroy the entire paper money system without anybody knowing it. And what they're trying to do if they did that, what they did in Europe by telling them to put the 500 note out, they're forcing people then to take the money out of their mattresses, put it back in the bank, and then they're going to tax it, whether it be daily, weekly. And that's why you hear all the talk about negative interest rates. They're going to tax that back in the bank to force you to spend it, because that's what Keynesian economic does. We need to spend our money.
I always learn so much when Terry Sacca is on with us.
I do too. I'm still trying to grasp.
You understand now why they want to get rid of the $100
bill. Of the $100 bill.
You right. better believe it. That's a war on cash. Now, I just say this to we the people. If you're sitting and storing in cash, or you think you're safe in your money markets, in your brokerage accounts, it's digits in the cosmos. You better think seriously about hard, tangible asset protection for what is coming, because if they're going to tax your paper money or take your paper money, then at least the silver, it's not even on the radar, because it's even though it's our constitutional money, mind you, Article 1, Section 8, grains of silver. That's why we're such advocates about having for medium, long-term storage of wealth into our constitutional money and biblical money in silver. They're going after cash mainly because they need it to circulate. They need you to spend. And if you're not going to spend, they force you to spend it by heavy taxation in the negative rates you're hearing all through the media.
All right. I am still trying to wrap my mind around the fact that not only is there not gold in Fort Knox, there's no stinking paper money in Fort Knox.
And we've got plenty of trees. So
it's supposed to be cotton. But
and what is the official number from the Federal Reserve of how much U.S. money is in circulation? Would you say $7 trillion?
Well, no, there's M1, M2, there's different supply lines, but the actual printed circular dollar notes is about $1.2 trillion right now. That's it. Now, mind you, there's $9 trillion on the digits in the banking system.
That's what I'm talking about.
But there's $9 trillion. The banking system has $9 trillion on record saying people think they have money in the bank on. yet there's only about 600 billion real paper notes. That's why when you go to the bank right now, if you try to draw out $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, they have to order it from the Treasury. They don't have the printed currency in the banking system anymore. It's a really big smoke and mirror. But for we the people, you think your hard-earned wealth is safe in a bank. It's not even there. It's a digit on a computer screen, whereas the silver in a vault is there, and that's why that was, you know, the passion for that. But yeah, it's not there, Rick. And I just have such I don't have fear, but I have to say almost similar for we the people and the churches and the ministry. If we're going to protect the kingdom, we better have our assets in the right place and not in the dishonest weight and measure that the printed dollar bill and the fiat world bring.
This reminds me of the 1950 Jimmy Stewart movie Harvey. Remember Harvey, the invisible rabbit?
Yes.
Jimmy Stewart could see Harvey. Mm-hmm. Nobody else could see it.
Right.
The Federal Reserve can see $9 trillion. say it's there.
And just like in the movie Harvey, a lot of people played along with it too and pretended like
they didn't want to offend Jimmy Stewart. So they said, yeah, there's Harvey.
Yeah,
but nobody really saw Harvey. So we're pretending with the Federal Reserve that there really are $9 trillion printed floating around in the world. But they're not there. Only Janet Yellen can see Harvey.
And it's hard for the American people, Rick. We're in a normalcy bias. People don't want to face the reality. It's too hard to make the changes. We hear it every day in the stories. I hear it from widows from every corner of the country, in individuals and people who've inherited money. The stories that are coming down are shocking. It just is not business as usual like 20, 25 years ago.
The entire financial system is a mirage. It's a house of mirrors. It does not exist, which means it's built on deception, which means it's unbiblical. How can God allow it to continue when it's so dishonest?
Proverbs 11:1, you know, dishonest weight and measure is an abomination. Honest scales are a delight. The reason I love silver is 1 ounce is 1 ounce. You can't fake it. You can't make it. Paper money, they're printing it. It's a dishonest weight and measure.
But they don't even print it. What you're telling us, Terry, they don't even print it. It's gone beyond. It's gone beyond that stage. They don't even print it.
I know. I shouldn't be laughing. You're right. Not only are they printing it, they're not printing it. So they printed so much, diluting the dollar's value over the last 40 years of this new standard. But then, because remember, we had $300 billion in circulation when we came off the 70s of the gold standard. $300 billion. Baby boomers were making money. We were the world's largest lender. Today, we have literally trillions in debt. We have 1.2 trillion more in circulation. They keep printing money. And yet now we're not the world's largest lender. We're the world's largest debtor in the history of the world.
All right. I want to bring Michael Snyder back in, the Economic Collapse blog. Michael, earlier you were talking about these dismal numbers of economic performance or lack of performance around the world, particularly the Chinese economy. Last year, throughout 2015, a lot of watchmen were warning about dire economic problems that would hit in late September. And I believe some people totally misconstrued what people were saying. And I think there were also some wannabe watchmen that jumped on the bandwagon and made statements that really weren't accurate. But what I kept saying to our audience was don't be looking for a single event. You know, I refer to it as the purple people eaters coming up out of the ground. You know, that's what people are waiting on, some super crazy dramatic event to happen. And when that doesn't happen, then they blame the watchmen. They blame the prophets. Oh, that wasn't true. That wasn't from God. Michael, looking back, was there a pivot in the fall of 2015? Because that's what I was telling my audience was coming. There would be a pivot. Don't look for a single event. Look for a pivot. Things will change. They will shift. Now looking back, what do you see?
Yeah, Rick, 100% there was a pivot, just like you said. And a lot of people are looking for one catastrophic event or the end of the world or whatever. But what we're looking at is a process that's going to play out over an extended period of time. Now, if you look back at them from the middle of 2015, well, what did we see? We got to August. And in late August, we did tremendous shaking into early September, and it was the most significant shaking of the financial world that we had seen since the 2008 crisis. In fact, at one point, $11 trillion had been wiped out from global stock markets all over the world, which is actually, as we were talking about earlier, more than actually all the money, digitized money in our system, according to the Federal Reserve. But so $11 trillion of global stock market wealth had all been completely wiped out. But then things kind of stabilized for a while. Markets, you know, went back up. Some did. The United States was one. And so people said, oh, you know, that wasn't so bad. We survived the crisis of 2015. Well, then we got to January and February. Financial markets all over the world started crashing again. And at one point last month, $16.5 trillion of global stock market wealth had been wiped out since the middle of 2015. So we have seen, without a doubt, the greatest and most significant shaking of the global financial system. And it's just not stocks that have crashed. We've seen since late 2014, the price of oil at one point was down more than 75% since it peaked in late 2014. So the tremendous amount of money was lost there. We've seen junk bonds crash for the first time since the 2008 crisis. Right before stocks crashed in 2008, junk bonds crashed, and now it's happening again. Huge losses all over the world with junk bonds tied into the energy industry. And so we've seen all of these crashes, tremendous trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars lost, and yet people don't understand that this is a process that continues to play out over time. So yeah, we've seen, another thing is industrial commodities. We've seen industrial, I'm talking about iron ore, tin, lead, aluminum, all these things, copper especially, all these things have crashed just like they did just before the 2008 crisis. And that's another sign that global economic activity is really slowing down, because when economic activity slows down, people need less lumber, they need less tin, they need less of all these things because they're building less, they're manufacturing less. Of these indicators, all of these things have crashed. Everybody agrees all these crashes have happened. Now, some people say it's not the end of the world yet, but a tremendous amount of damage has already been done. We've seen the pivot happen, and now the underlying economic numbers are telling us global recession is here. In fact, in South America, it's a depression, according to Goldman Sachs. If you look at what's happening in Brazil, for example, their economy shrunk 3.8% in 2015. But for the most recent quarter, it was a decline of 5.89%, the worst yet so far. So their economic, Goldman Sachs had called it an economic depression before these most recent numbers, and it's accelerating the crisis there. Things are even worse in Venezuela. Their economy shrunk by 10%. In 2015, their inflation rate is up to a staggering 181% on an annual basis, which is insane. This is causing hoarding. It's causing food shortages. Basically, South America is a tremendous mess right now. This is happening all over the world. And so people need to realize we're not looking at a week or a day or a month. This is something that's a process that's playing out. It's accelerating. It's getting worse. And so, you know, people shouldn't be fooled. Yeah, okay, the U.S. stocks have had a good couple of weeks. We're going to see ups and downs. But when you look at the bigger picture, this is the greatest financial shaking by far since the last time around. Yeah, things aren't quite as bad as 2008 yet, but we are definitely heading in that direction.
Venezuela's mess is largely due to the socialist government of,
of the late Hugo Chavez, and then his successor. And then we got people here, we got millions of Americans chanting, "We want Bernie Sanders." Take a trip to Venezuela, check out socialism. You can't even buy a roll of toilet paper. That's socialism. Yay, socialism. Bernie Sanders. That's what you're going to have in America if you get President Bernie Sanders. You'll have to hide your toilet paper because your neighbors won't have any.
Well, you won't be able to use the money either because it's being typed, right?
That's right. You can't even use the money as toilet paper because they don't even print the money.
That's right. It's all imaginary. It's digital
money. Toilet paper.
You know, when I was in the Army just before the Berlin Wall fell, we actually went in a really neat mission where we went across Checkpoint Charlie into East Berlin, which, of course, Soviet communist. I will never forget the drab depression. The way that they, I mean, even the hot dog they served us, no condiments, no ice in the glass. Families had to hand down automobiles from generation to generation. It was such a horrific depression when we were doing this kind of neat little mission. And I'll never forget that. What you're saying, Rick, the Americans have a zero clue of what real socialism or communism looks like because they've never seen it in the eyes of people like East Germany back in the day.
That's right. You know, in Cuba, most of the cars are 1940s and 1950s today.
Right.
Right.
That's communism for you. And yet we have millions of American citizens chanting they want socialism in 2016. And they have no idea what they are asking for. They're just a bunch of spoiled brats that want an easy life, and they want somebody else to take care of them, and they don't want to have any responsibility for anything in their life. And they think they have the right to go take it from somebody else. And that's really the mindset of the people right now. Hey, on the topic of politics, I've heard various people talking about Hillary Clinton's tax on cash. I don't know what they're talking about. Does anybody know what this plan is?
Well, it's very similar to what we were talking about earlier, where
so negative interest rates.
Yes, well, not just interest rates. What they would do is they would force you, if they got away with it. Because remember, Larry Summers is directly tied to Hillary Clinton. So what you would find is they would, if they got away with taking the $100 bill out of circulation, 70% of all printed money comes out of circulation, forcing we the people in the ma and pa's to take money out of the mattress that they're hiding, put it back in the bank. Once it lands in the bank, then the plan at that point, which this is referencing, is they would then tax you through bank fees, whether it be daily or weekly or monthly, a percentage, 10, 15, 20% of your money, if you do not spend your cash. That is the war on cash they're referring to. Basically, forcing you to bring it back to a bank and then forcing you to spend it. And that's why I love the concept of silver, because they can't force you to put that in a bank because they don't even want it. So that's the war that Hillary was referring to, or what they're talking about, because Summers, Hillary, they're all in the same mindset, leading us to that one world socialist order.
Terry, you and I had this conversation last weekend in a private call, and I asked you, regarding this sudden propaganda campaign that started in January about abolishing cash. And I ask you, I said, do they really want to abolish cash, or are they deliberately scaring people to spend their money now in a desperate last-ditch effort to spur the economy, kind of like the last stimulus that they can come up with?
I would say both. Yes, for the last stimulus, and in the ultimate utopic world of a socialist, abolish cash, because once it's 100% digital, they can turn the economy up or turn it on and off based on how much they fine you, whether you spend or not. So they will actually, if it's all digital, they would be able to force you to spend money and then force you not to spend money if the economy got too heated up. So that's the ultimate utopic vision, but I would probably say a little of both, Rick. Initially, a stimulus, but in their ideal world, if they could fool the people, they would have a full digital world because it's 100% not only control of the barometer economically, but then 100% spy and control of every agency who knows exactly who you talk to, where you go, what you do, what you buy. And there you go. There's your Luciferian control system.
And not only would they have that kind of surveillance,
yes,
but they would have total control because if you're a bad boy in the eyes of the state,
yes,
they just take your digits away.
Well, right.
And I'm not talking about your fingers.
Or the power to access your digits.
That's right.
Or even so, you guys have all had this, right? How many times have you ever been out and your credit card got turned off because they thought it was fraud?
Cool.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So they don't even have to have access to the digits. They just say, you're not playing along with our political agenda. We're going to turn off your card.
That happened to me last year at Christmas time. Susan and I, we were in Branson on New Year's Eve having dinner in Branson.
Oh.
And, you know, it was noisy. We're in a restaurant. A lot of people in the streets of Branson. And, you know, I get this phone call, and this person tells me it's Citibank. And they want to talk to me about my card. And I'm like, is this for real? This is New Year's Eve. You know, are you really calling me on New Year's Eve? I'm trying to hear with all the noise in the restaurant. And I finally said, you know, you have to prove to me you're Citibank. I don't even know who you are. But then they said, there's fraudulent activity on your card, and we have disabled your card. I said, you can't do that. I'm having dinner right now, and I'm on a trip with my wife. I'm not home. And well, you know, we've disabled your card. There's fraudulent, and there really was fraudulent activity on it. I'm glad they did call.
But was it really, Rick, or what did you say on the radio the day before?
No, they're really – well, somebody did some fraudulent activity, and Citibank did take care of it for me. And somebody was shopping in Massachusetts. And this is – you know, this was weird because I thought it was online fraudulent activity, and it was physical store purchases. Right. And I'm like, well, how could they purchase – something fraudulently with my credit card in Massachusetts when the card's in my wallet? All right. And then I didn't know that they're making fake cards.
Yeah, now. Cloning cards.
They're cloning the cards. So, but anyhow, the point I'm making, Terry, is, yeah, I experienced what that's like, you know, to be 1,500 miles away from home and your card is shut down and you're told, you know, it'll be a week until we get a new card to you.
Now imagine the FBI calling a bank and saying, we have this person, Rick Wiles. We're suspecting him of, you know, money laundering, whatever. We've got to shut off that account.
That's right.
Because we can't have any more of that money laundering going on.
Donnie, go take
it's
one.
It's merely a political decision. Nothing was ever done. I mean, just like civil asset forfeitures. They're taking money from innocent people without any committed crime whatsoever. It just doesn't make any sense, and it can't work. And just by that mere story, Rick, it tells you if they go full digital, the fraud and waste and abuse would be enormous on our cars. I mean, you almost are forced to travel when you do stuff like that with a few thousand dollars on you in currency because of that reason.
And if it is all digital, there's no accountability. I mean, who's accountable for that?
Hey, speaking of digital robbery, what about the Federal Reserve being robbed? $100 million.
Right, huh?
Yeah, denying it too.
Yeah, so the Fed was it the New York Fed, right?
Yes, mm-hmm.
the big granddaddy. Chinese hackers took $100 million out of the Fed.
Out of the Bangladesh account of the Federal
yes.
Reserve.
The Bangladesh Central Bank's. Well, why does Bangladesh have their digits over in?
Well,
I mean, they have just digits. You don't even have money, Bangladesh. You got digits. Why do you put your digits over in the New York Federal Reserve anyhow? Somebody got in to the digit machine and took 100 million digits from Bangladesh. And then I found another article at the same time that said $100 million was laundered through casinos in Macau, the gambling capital. Yes, it was the Philippines.
Yes.
Yep. In the Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
You lived in the Philippines. What do you know about that story in that was the Inquirer newspaper?
Right. And the casinos are really controlled by the government in the Philippines. And so it's interesting that this money was laundered through them, cashed out, and not all of it. But Bangladesh was actually able to recover part of the money.
So the money didn't go to the Chinese casinos in Macau. It went to casinos in the Philippines.
Right.
And actually $100 million.
That's right. Now, the Fed's denying that they were hacked, right? They're saying we did everything right. It's a SWIFT problem. That's the article today.
SWIFT meaning the bank wire system.
That's right. That there was fraud in there.
That's the only control we have left is SWIFT. If we didn't control the SWIFT, we wouldn't really have a lot of leverage. Granted, we have the best military in the world. SWIFT is what we're using to blackmail and to extort or basically discipline non-compliant people in the financial world. I mean, there's a French bank that did some money with Iran, and so they used the SWIFT, and they said, you now owe us $8 billion in fines for going beyond the sanctions. And the only reason that the feds could do that is because they control the SWIFT. And so they had to pay the $8 billion because, you know, they don't want to be locked out of the SWIFT system. And then, of course, our president goes around a month later and then frees Iran from all these goodies. But the SWIFT is all we have left as a control, like a noose around the world. And the thing is, the Russians had already developed their own SWIFT, and the BRICS are already lining up with that. So I'm not so sure that we even have that in the future.
And that's why the B-52s have been sent to Turkey.
Yep. World War III, just to distract people away from this real big petrodollar collapse relationship, which has already taken place. I mean, Iran came out and clearly said right after the sanctions that they no longer will accept dollars for their oil. It has to be euros, completely bypassing the petro agreement. And that's why, you know, we can't have it, because if we lose the petro agreement, meaning every country has to store dollars to buy oil, we're in a lot of trouble.
Would I be fair to say that the only thing really backing up the U.S. dollar is the U.S. military?
And the SWIFT system, yes.
That's it.
Because there's no assets.
There are no assets. Our nukes. Our dollar is backed by nukes.
The nuclear-backed dollar.
That's exactly it. Hey, Arthur Berman, who is a geologist, petroleum geologist, he was on the program the other day. He's out of Houston. Very knowledgeable man about the petroleum industry. He said that we're looking at, Edward, what was it, the percentage of bankruptcies in the energy-related American companies?
It's 30 to 50%.
30 to 50% of the energy companies in America may file bankruptcy this year. Now, those are numbers that he's been told. He's not an economist. These are numbers he's been told.
But it was at a meeting with, yes, you know, heads of the industry, all the CEOs out in the University of Texas, and everyone agreed when that number was thrown out there.
30 to 50% of the U.S. energy companies going belly up 2016. What's that going to do for the recovery? The Obama recovery, will that set it back? Don't you crack up laughing every time you hear the media talking about the recovery? What recovery? We're going deeper into a global depression. Michael, what do you know about the state of the oil industry? Are you tracking any of this?
Oh, I am. And there was just a headline on CNBC just about a week or so ago, which said that 35% of all the energy companies, oil and gas companies in the entire world are in danger of bankruptcy. Mm-hmm. So that number is very similar to the number that you just gave. And of course, we've already seen this. Since the beginning of 2015, 67 U.S. oil and gas companies have already gone bankrupt. So we've already seen a huge wave of bankruptcies. And this is a huge problem because since the last recession, the primary engine for the growth of good jobs, of good-paying middle-class jobs in this country, was the energy industry. But now that's completely reversed. Well over 100,000 good-paying energy jobs have already been lost in this country. Our neighbor to the north, Canada, is a total basket case at this point because of the decline of oil and gas. And so, you know, a lot of people say, well, I can go to the gas pump, I can fill up my tank cheaply, I like that. And that's a good thing for consumers, but for jobs, it's horrible. For these energy companies, they're going bankrupt. And then, of course, these energy companies were being funded by the banks and the big financial institutions. And so, you know, these big energy companies account for somewhere between 15 and 20% of the junk bond market. We've already seen massive losses in the junk bonds, and that's just beginning. And we're seeing these banks come out and start to say, well, we've got to set aside more money for energy losses. We're going to have big losses. We've got to set aside billions of dollars or whatever it is. So we're starting to see the dominoes start to fall. And these big banks, they're exposed to these energy companies and huge losses. So if they go bankrupt, the losses for these financial institutions, for the too big to fail and everything else, could be just staggering. And actually, the banks in Europe are more exposed than the banks in the United States are to the energy industry. And so we're seeing, you know, Deutsche Bank, actually in February, their stock price went below where it went at during any point during the crisis of 2008. That's the biggest bank in Germany. In Italy, they've got a full-blown financial crisis happening right now where some of their banks are down more than 50% just since the start of 2016, their stock prices. They're swamped with NPLs, non-performing loans. In fact, the NPLs in Italian banks are about 12% of Italy's entire GDP. That's what the, you know, and so it's a huge mess. Italy, the whole Italian banking system is melting down. People are pulling money out. And so it's a giant mess. And so why is this a huge problem? Well, we remember what happened in Greece. But Greece is only the 44th largest economy in the entire world. Italy is far larger. The Italian economy is the 8th largest economy in the entire world. So when Italy goes down, how in the world is Europe going to pick up the pieces?
And Michael, real quick, would you happen to know, because what about the derivatives tied to all of this? It has to be trillions and trillions, derivatives tied into the energy stuff.
Yeah, it is trillions of dollars tied to the energy industry. And you know, so you know, I just mentioned Deutsche Bank. They've got exposure to derivatives of $50 trillion. So that's a huge thing. And you know, what happened was a lot of these energy companies, they went in and they locked in their price of oil, you know, ahead of time, whether 6 months, a year, 2 years. And they locked it in using these derivatives contracts. And so when it was $90 a barrel, $100 a barrel, they locked in their profits. And in the past, banks made tons of money doing that, so they were glad to do that. But then when the price of oil plunged 70, 75% like we're seeing now, well, someone's going to be left holding the bag. And in the end, it could very well be these people who are left with these derivatives contracts where they guaranteed the price of oil at $90 or $100 a barrel. But then, you know, in the end, they're only going to get 30, 35, 37, wherever it is sitting today, for the oil when it is actually sold. So there's going to be absolutely massive losses tied to these derivatives. And of course, it's the too big to fail banks here in the United States, which are, you know, tremendously exposed. In fact, you know, there's something like four of our, you know, I'm talking about banks like Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan Chase. They have exposure to derivatives of more than $50 trillion each. And so, you know, too big to fail, you know, our politicians last time around, they said, we're going to fix this problem. We're going to fix too big to fail. Well, since the last crisis, they never fit. In fact, the too big to fail banks today are more than 40% larger than they were the last time around. Meanwhile, 1,400 smaller banks have gone out of existence in the United States. So the problem of too big to fail is now bigger than ever. They're super exposed to the energy industry and all these other problems around the world, emerging markets like Brazil, super exposed. So the dominoes are starting to fall. So look, you know, as we move into the later stages of 2016, look for problems at the too big to fail banks here in the United States and also all over the planet.
Michael, this is a really important point that you're bringing out about the indebtedness regarding the energy sector. Art Berman pointed out that global economic growth only takes place when energy prices are low. When energy prices rise, global economic growth slows down. So the only way to spur global economic growth is to lower energy prices. He said energy prices are still too high at the current rate to spur economic growth in the world. But the problem is the energy companies are leveraged. They're deep in debt. The banks have massive exposure to the debt of the energy companies, and the derivatives are tied to this debt. And so this is a catch-22 situation. You can't spur economic growth in the world until you bring down the price of oil. But if you bring down the price of oil below where it's at right now, it will bring about a financial Armageddon.
Because they're leveraged so much.
Because they're leveraged. It's the debt that's going to destroy everything.
I understand that now.
That's a, you know what, a great visual for that, gentlemen. 9/11 in the towers, the financial towers. Keynesian economics must be towers built one layer at a time, higher and higher, which is debt, deficit, debt, spending. And if you don't, the tower collapses. There's such a symbolic thing about what happened at 9/11, way beyond terrorism, because what you just described, they have no choice, but now they're getting caught. They're getting caught putting a building too high into the stratosphere, and it looks like they're not going to be able to stick another level on, which we're talking then collapse.
Michael, there was a day you were an attorney in Washington, D.C., and you made the mistake of listening to True News. And your life changed. And then one day you got out of D.C. and you went to the hills of Idaho, right? You're in Idaho. And you started telling people what was coming. They needed to get ready. And so you picked up the mantle of being a watchman, and you've done an awesome job doing this, this assignment. How many years has that been now since you started the Economic Collapse blog?
Yeah, I started it in late 2009. And as you said, I was working as an attorney right down on K Street, right in the heart of Washington, D.C., but God brought me out of there, originally out to the West Coast near Seattle for a little over a year, but now here to the mountains of Idaho. So he took me from, you think, the center of everything, Washington, D.C., but he took me out to the middle of nowhere, me and my wife, to the mountains of Idaho, where we live in the middle of nowhere, you know, no one around, and yet God is using us in, you know, incredible ways where the articles are seen all over the world, and he's opened up all these incredible doors. But I want people to be inspired by that, because in the end, you know, God can use anyone. He can even use a former Washington, D.C. attorney, move him out in the middle of nowhere, and yet if you're in the middle of God's will, God can use you. And from my little spot on the wall, I'm trying to sound the alarm as loudly as I can. And but individually, I'm limited. I can only do so much. But collectively, if we all work together, we can make a tremendous difference. And so that's what I'm encouraging people to do, because there's so few voices sounding the alarm. You know, why does True News shine so brightly? Why does the Jim Baker Show shine so brightly? What, you know, it's because the church is so dead. If the church was doing their job, then we would just be another voice, you know, in the chorus. We wouldn't even be noticed.
Amen.
But because the church isn't doing their job, the church is so dead, the church is not talking about these things, the few voices that are being watchmen, that are sounding the alarm, they shine brightly. They seem like they stick out so dramatically, but it's because the rest of the church is not doing their job.
Maybe the church is a lot smaller than we realize.
Amen.
The real church is doing its job. And doing it greatly. And the harlot religious system is just being a harlot, just making love to the world. But the real church The real church is doing quite well.
Growing.
Growing. Shining. Being a great beacon of light for the Lord Jesus Christ. Refusing to compromise with Babylon. What I wanted to ask you, Michael, is looking back now over these 9 years, leaving Washington, D.C., and devoting your entire life now to being a watchman, because that's really what you are. Whether you call yourself a watchman or not, that's really what you're doing. You're up on the wall, and you're looking out over the horizon, and you're telling people, this is what I see coming. Overall, are people heeding the warning, or do you feel frustrated that most of the people that come in contact with your website really don't get it?
I think there's some of both, Rick. You know, the traffic to my website continues to grow throughout the process, and there are so many people who email me and say, how can I get prepared? And I've been contacted by people who they're not only preparing for themselves, but they're building places of refuge. I was contacted by someone in New York State who is converting a hotel and surrounding facilities into a city of refuge, a place of refuge, and he wanted me to get personally involved. I wasn't able to do that, but I encouraged him. I said, what you're doing is great. I've been contacted by people in Tennessee, in southern Idaho, in Canada, all over the place where these cities of refuge, these places of refuge are being prepared, not just for a small group of people, but we're talking about hundreds, in some cases thousands of people. This place in southern Idaho is preparing for potentially when the time of trouble comes, thousands of people, of believers gathering together in a place where they can be taken care of. But on the other hand, I'm frustrated that so many people seem so apathetic. You know, that 2008 is a distant memory, and so many people seem to have so much blind faith in the Federal Reserve and the Obama administration, and they think, oh, everything's going to be just fine. You know, and we see today 63% of all Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. They didn't learn their lesson from the last time around. More than half the country does not have a 3-day supply of non-perishable food or water in their home. You know, so most of the country, they don't have emergency supplies. They don't have a 6-month emergency fund. They're not even making the basic preparations. And so that's frustrating. But, you know, just like the warning voices of old, you know, Jeremiah, he had to prophesy for years and years and years before anything happened. And, of course, he was greatly persecuted. The government didn't want to listen. The king didn't want to listen. Most of the people didn't want to listen. But in the end, he was proven correct. And so all we can do is sound the alarm. Most people aren't listening, but some people are. And as you said, God is raising up a remnant, and to a large degree it's outside of the institutional church. It's home churches, it's small Bible study groups, and yeah, there's small churches out there that are doing a great job. And so God is moving, people are getting prepared, and my wife and I, we believe that the greatest move of God in the history of the world is coming, and the greatest chapters of our lives are ahead, and people are going to need hope in what's coming, and that's going to be a real big part of our message moving forward. But also, we are warning the people, but most people aren't listening, but some people are.
You know why, Michael? Because preachers are not sent to everybody. Preachers are sent to specific people. And as preachers, we get frustrated when the masses don't listen to us, but they never were meant to listen to us.
That's right.
We're sent to specific people.
We're sent to tribes.
To those who have ears to hear.
Yep.
And that's all we need to be concerned about, reaching the people that we were supposed to reach. And the rest of them, they got to sort things out on their own. But our job is to proclaim what God has put in our hearts and be able to stand in front of God someday, blameless and with clean hands, and say, I did everything you told me to do. I said everything you told me to say. I didn't hold anything back. Terry Sciacca, before we wrap this up, I wanted to ask you the same thing. Are you seeing a decrease or an increase in the number of people who want to get their assets out of the Babylonian paper money world and into physical assets such as silver?
Exponential increase ever since September. We've almost doubled the staff. We are seeing not just people in a method of diversification, we're seeing full-on transfer of accounts, annuities cashing out, people getting out of the way and just storing, instead of paper cash, or which is not there, but instead of storing money in a bank or money in a money market with a brokerage, they're putting it into physical silver in the vault for the retirement accounts. We're not only seeing exponential growth in interest, the size of the accounts are growing. But what's interesting about what you guys said, I can concur, because we've been doing this for years. Only those that seem to be coming in, the stories are beautiful. They're waking up with dreams. They're on the couch sleeping. They wake up, they see our TV program on, or something else comes up, or they've heard on even on the radio. These are people that are Holy Spirit in tune for the most part, and they're feeling that sense of urgency in their spirit. And so they just realize something's really wrong, and they would rather go into constitutional money, biblical money like silver in a vault that has zero third-party risk, than keep it in a bank or a brokerage right now with all of this uncertainty we've been talking about. So it's picking up, and my passion, every single Christian, we the people get it, because more that get it will have that reap of wealth transfer for the future, so the kingdom's protected. But sadly, you're probably right, Rick. It's only still those that have something bug in their spirit that is wrong. We're even seeing spouses argue. One person is passionate, the other one is not. One person's in the field, one's taken, one's not. One's sleeping, one's taken, one's not. That sounds familiar, doesn't it?
Sure does.
So, and this is what we're seeing now, and so we're just moving right along. I think because we are the refiner and the minter, it's nice for being directly into the supply, so we're able to feed that demand, but not enough as far as I'm concerned. I think the churches and the ministries are really missing it. They're sitting in too much in the wrong place, and that's a concern. How can they be there for their people?
Well, it's not the end of the world, but it is the end of the system. As we have known it, there is a transformation taking place. We just happen to be the generation that's alive to witness this. Other generations have gone through things as dramatic as this. If you were around when the Roman Empire fell, you would have thought it was the end of the world.
Right.
Especially if you were holding a lot of Roman coins. Did you ever think about that, Terry? What did people do back then that had debased Roman coins?
That's really interesting, because Rome actually was wealthy. They were gold and silver, and then they found they needed more money to pay off the mercenaries, so they started bringing in the gold, and then they started melting it down and adding copper, to the point where then all of the money became nothing but copper. So the smart, which is aggression law, the smart people started holding on to the actual gold and silver, and then the copper became the only money, and then, of course, the Roman Empire collapses. We did the same thing here. Our dollar bill was a silver certificate backed by a physical silver ounce. Those that held the silver ounce back in the 70s to this very day, $100,000 from then is worth, you know, right now, gosh, probably $1.7 million.
But all we have now are digits.
Well, yeah, but digits if you kept paper. But if for those people, when just like in Rome, those people in the United States, if they just kept the dollars that were silver instead of the paper, they kept the silver for the last 30, 40 years, regardless what the price has been doing. That very silver dollar from the 70s is worth $1.7 million today on $100,000. So I'm just really saying that are holding on to the wrong assets.
Right. Well, the point
just
I'm making
like in Rome.
Yeah, the point I'm making is what we are experiencing is dramatic. It's global. The existing world order is breaking up. The parts are coming off of the bus as it's going down the road. We're literally watching this breakup take place. A new world order is emerging. None of us really know what it's going to look like and how long it's going to take until it comes together. And it may be the end of the age, as the Bible foretells, this may just be another chapter in human history, and time goes on for quite some time. But one thing is for certain, the old system is breaking up and a new system is emerging. And so wise, smart people will look at the signs, look at the evidence around them, and make decisions. And these decisions will not only preserve you, these decisions will preserve your children and your grandchildren.
Right.
Amen.
And they will look back and say, I am so glad that my parents or my grandparents made those sound decisions at that time because it changed the course of our family history. That is how important this age is right now. We are in the midst of a global transformation. And the old money system is breaking into pieces. Something new is coming. God forbid it is a digital cashless society with microchips in our hand or forehead. Because if that's the case, then we're out of here in a few years. The Lord is coming back. We know where this is going. But it may not be. That could turn out to be decades away or even a century away. We don't know. You know, the Lord is able to just take his hand and knock all the game pieces off the game board. I mean, mankind is a puny little creature in the eyes of the Lord. He looks down from heaven at mankind and goes, isn't that cute? Watch this. And he just takes his hand across the face of the earth and says, there, I just messed up all their plans and schemes. So let's not give up on the Lord. You know, the church ought to be praying right now that the schemes and the plans of the evil one, Lucifer, we ought to be praying that his plans and schemes are stopped. We're just prophesying that Satan's plans are going to come true. I mean, that's what we're doing. We're just constantly prophesying along with Satan. Oh, yeah, you're taking over everything. No, you're not. Amen. We are the church.
I'm with you.
And let's put up some spiritual resistance in the name of Jesus Christ. We don't have to allow these thieves at the Federal Reserve to steal everything. We can bind the strong man.
Amen.
We could call down fire from heaven on these people.
Yeah.
But we're just sitting back saying, oh my, oh me. I'm talking about the Christians who are aware of what's going on. The rest of them don't even know what's happening. But those of us who know what's going on, we're just wringing our hands and saying, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? How about call upon the living God? We're in trouble. Help, Lord, help. The world is falling apart down here. We need help. And he's just waiting on the church to cry out.
Amen.
And let's not limit him. We don't know what God will do. Satan and his followers believe that they are ready to clinch the deal. They got the New World Order. They've got the global government in place. They're ready to come in for the kill. Well, maybe it's too soon. Maybe God's waiting on his church to cry out and say, help us. Papa, help us. Send some angels down here. We need some help. The Lord could break up this thing.
Amen.
Wouldn't be the first time. I mean, Hitler tried to do it. Hitler thought he was going to rule for 1,000 years. Didn't work out that way, did it? Hitler's in the grave. And Jesus is on the throne. And the church is alive. And so I just want to encourage everybody to put your hope and your trust in Jesus Christ.
Amen.
Call upon the name of the Lord. Corporately as the church, we should be uniting. We should be binding the strong man. We ought to be binding these evil forces on the earth. We ought to be asking God to expose the wickedness, the evil, the schemes, the lies, the deception. Bring it out in the open. Expose them. Let the whole thing fall apart. And let the world catch its breath. We don't have to go into nuclear war. We don't have to go into a global financial collapse where billions of people are searching for food every day. We don't have to do that. We could call upon the name of the Lord for help. That's my cry right now. It's the shout, whoa, everybody, whoa. Let's stop prophesying our own death and doom. Yes, it's bad, but we ought to be crying out to God right now for help. That's my little sermon for today. Hey, I want to thank everybody for being here today. Michael Snyder, he is the publisher of The Economic Collapse blog, which you can find at theeconomiccollapseblog.com. And Terry Sacca, he's the president of Cornerstone Asset Metals, and his website is cornerstoneassetmetals.com. Doc Burkhardt Edwards-Zoll here with me today. Thank you for listening. I'll see you tomorrow. This is True News.